Bruce Williamson is a spokesperson for Rail Futures and he joins me on the line. Hello, Bruce.
Hi.
I'm guessing you're one of the campaigners that isn't very happy about this.
Yeah, we aren't very happy about this. I mean, it's interesting you talk about delivering investment, but, you know, in my neck of the woods, I'm calling you from Bristol, the Great Western Electrification, which is a major investment project, has been sort of stalled. The electrification is going to stop halfway to Bristol, and there's no indication of when it's going to happen again. But yeah, there's another reason why we're unhappy as well, and we have to get technical about inflation, because there are two measures of inflation, and the government says it prefers the consumer price index. That's just 0.6%. That would be a very nice increase in rail fares, wouldn't it? Just a tiny little increase. But there's another measure of inflation, which is the higher one, which is RPI, which is, you know, not the government's preferred measure of inflation. But of course, that's the one they use when they want to jack the rail fares up. So, you know, compared to what you might call real life or wages or pensions or benefits or, you know, the real world inflation, this is a real increase. It's not just an inflation increase. It's a real increase on rail fares. And it means that, you know, rail fares for hardworking people who just want to get to work, the rail fare is taking an ever greater chunk out of their income, and we think that's not fair.
If you look at, and I'm sure you're aware of this, but people like the Rail Delivery Group have said that they represent the train operators. They're saying that around 97 pence in every pound, that's a lot, clearly, 97 pence in every pound paid by passengers goes back into running and improving services. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say that's true, really. I mean, you know, the train operating companies themselves, they actually have very little room for manoeuvre, you know, because they are sort of micromanaged by the Department for Transport. And the 3%, the not 97%, represents their profit, which in the big scheme of things isn't a very, you know, a very huge amount. It's a fairly small margin. I know it does amount to millions of pounds, and the unions will tell you that, you know, that it's absolutely scandalous that they're getting all this money. But, you know, I think the train operating companies are running a fairly tight ship. So the blame for this has to lie fairly and squarely with the government, I think.
But does it? Because if, you know, the average passenger who doesn't think about the economic ins and outs, they go, like me, they go up and they try and pre-book if they're going somewhere to try and get the best fares. And, you know, it's often, as you know, it's a small fortune, let alone for people who have to commute every day and pay a huge whack of their salary out of it. They would look at that and go, you're telling me that 97p out of every pound that they're paying over is going into the running of these services, and these services are, frankly, and I can't use a word because I'd have to take myself off air, but you know what I'm trying to say, they're terrible.
Absolutely.
And I'm surprised, because you're here going, well, you know, actually the train operators, I did not expect you to say that. They're saying they're only taking 3%.
Well, yeah, I mean,
what are they doing with the 97%?
Well, yeah, clearly you're thinking mostly of Southern there, and it's been a dismal year for Southern and a dismal year for Southern's passengers, and that's sort of part of the pain. I mean, I agree with you. It doesn't seem fair, does it, that they've had an appalling year with very poor services, and they're expected to pay more for that.
It's not, you know. I mean, Southern, as we all know, Southern have had a terrible year. I've got friends who live on that, you know, in their neck of the woods, and they are beside themselves with not being able to get into work or having to use alternative routes and dealing with childcare issues because they can't get back into all that awful hell that you have to break. But it's a lot of the other services are not up to scratch. If you look at us and you think, oh, you know, we've got a rich tradition and history of train travel, we should be good. You go to other countries, ours is rubbish.
I kind of agree with you that the key to this is decades of, and I do mean decades of, underinvestment in Britain's railways. I mean, it's been a pretty bad year for trains in Scotland as well, and I've just mentioned the investment that's stalled. So, you know, to be fair, there is investment happening. You know, there are some new trains appearing, there are some lines being electrified, there are, you know, some new stations being opened. But think of it this way, you know, we've had in the last 20 years an amazing growth in the railways. The railways have been a huge success story, and the passenger numbers have doubled. But we certainly don't have double the amount of trains or double the amount of lines and so on. So the government is having to play catch-up, really. And it, you know, it all stems from a sort of long-term lack of vision. But I think there should be a recognition that, you know, particularly for, as we say, Southern passengers, that they're not getting value for money. And there's another important point I'd like to make, actually, which is about the alternatives. The alternative is you drive. And if you're a driver, well, you have the fortune of having fuel duty for your car, for your petrol, which has been frozen for 5 years. So the government has got a real double standard here. They're saying, look, we're not going to increase prices for commuters at all, drivers at all, for 5 years, but the poor old rail passengers are getting, you know, ripped off more and more every year. And it's simply not fair. It's a real bias against rail passengers and in favour of the motorists.
I hear what you're saying, but if you look at, and you will know more about this, but if you look at how the funding is done for the railways, actually millions of us use the train, but actually it's not as high as proportion as you think. But the taxpayer proportion of the rail bill has gone up, and therefore you, within that, obviously you've got a huge swathe of people who don't use the railways who are paying for them.
You know, the taxpayer proportion of the railways has actually gone down because it's a very deliberate policy of the government to shift the burden of paying for the railways on to the passenger, which on the face of it seems fair enough.
Well, Bruce, I'm not sure, because I've seen figures quoted today that the proportion paid by passengers was 50% and it's now closer to 70%.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. You said the proportion paid by taxpayers. The proportion paid by rail passengers has gone up, the proportion paid by taxpayers has gone down. But of course, even if you don't use the railways, you benefit from reduced congestion for your motoring. Mm. You know, you benefit from a cleaner environment because rail pollutes a lot less. And it's an essential engine. It's an essential driver of the economy to have an efficient rail network. And that's something that our European partners seem to recognise, you know, a lot more than we do in this country. Rail has huge knock-on benefits. And you know, there are many arguments as well that, you know, I mean, the street that I live on, I don't suppose that makes a profit, but no one is advocating that it closes down because it doesn't pay for itself. You know, we need streets and we need railways, and I think it's only right that the taxpayer makes at least some contribution to the running of the railway.
What do you think, if you were, you know, if I put you in charge of the sort of fantasy head of one of the train companies, what do you think would be the first thing that you would do in terms of spending the money better?
Well, the train companies, they don't have much room for manoeuvre. There's not much they can do, really. It lies in the hands of the government, and I think that the first priority is to stop this feast and famine that we've got on the railways. I mentioned the stalled electrification. Mm. It's just not good for the railways. And this, you know, we want a long-term vision and a long-term commitment to ongoing investment, and it will take years, if not decades, to turn it round. And in the short term, I think we ought to a little bit more parity, a little bit more fairness between the motorists and the rail passengers, and stop having these above inflation rail fare increases and move on to CPI at most.
Bruce, finally, what's your own journey like? I don't know if you commute yourself.
Well, I do use the railways. It'd be a bit bizarre if it was one of these rail campaigners who never goes on a train. But I'm fortunate that I'm very fortunate that I don't live anywhere in Southern's Patch, and I don't actually commute because I work mostly from home. So, you know, my experience has actually been very good. But then I avoid the sardine trains.
Yes, I think pretty much everyone has got the sympathies of the people who live on the Southern Patch. Yeah. Bruce, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
Cheers.
Bruce Williamson there, spokesperson for Rail Futures.